That's what I did. I screwed up.
Good evening, everyone. It is Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, and that means we are live, The Edge of Reality, here on the NDB Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Happy Thursday to you all. And, of course, Thursday night means that it's Friday. It is tomorrow, one step closer to the weekend. So happy weekend, everyone. And you heard our closing music instead of our intro music.
So
that's
they,
cool.
For those
I love them both.
Around, they get to hear it.
I love them both. That's okay. That's how we're rolling today. That's okay. Big show for you tonight. We got to talk some Survivor. We're going to talk some Are You the One? Some Project Runway. We're going to discuss Voice. We're going to get into a bunch of different stuff tonight. So before I say anything else, I want to say hello to my co-host and producer, Priscilla. Hey, Priscilla, what's going on this evening?
Good evening. And I'd like to wish my mama a happy 87th birthday. It was yesterday, but anyways, happy birthday, mama.
Happy birthday. Yeah, birthday shout outs. Hey, get involved with the conversation with us. You can follow us on our Facebook page, The Edge of Reality. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am at Reality Alley. That's Reality A-L-L-I-E. Priscilla is at P-S-I-L-L-A. And, of course, you can catch this show and all our shows on archive on blogtalkradio.com or on iTunes. And, a bunch of things rolling out now. It is the fall. We're getting deep into some of these shows, which I'm loving. A couple things, though, I wanted to talk about first, just real quick, like off the bat things. Last season, last spring, in fact, a show premiered called The Toy Box. It was one of the Friday night shows back when Fridays got huge for, you know, and when we had like Amazing Race and we had First Dates and a couple other shows coming on Friday night. And I watched it. It was kind of billed as like Shark Tank for toys. It was kind of, it wasn't great. I didn't love it. I stuck with it through most of it because I wanted to see, like, what conclusion they came to. They chose a toy. They manufactured it with Toys R Us. It was, you know, Toys R Us was their primary partner. Ratings weren't great. It wasn't a great show. No. So I thought that it was canceled. I really did. I thought, oh, well, that happened, and now we, you know, something else will happen. Not the case, though. Not the case. Toy Box is back. So if you did enjoy it, it is back. It is on Sundays at 7 p.m. So I not a ton of faith now. I mean, they gave it a time slot that has been for years America's Funniest Home Videos. For years, that was 7 o'clock. They moved America's Funniest Home Videos to 8 o'clock, the primetime spot. And they changed the format of the show completely. So those four kind of pretentious kids that were there last time, they're all gone. They kind of replaced them with five this is a horrible thing to say, five more average kids. Five more, you know, five kids that, you know, no one's in a bow tie. Everybody looks like they're kids that would play with toys. I thought that the kids were so stiff. They were so, putting on their Sunday best, and they weren't, you know, how could you possibly run around and play with toys when you're wearing like a shirt buttoned up to the collar and a bow tie and a blazer with a pocket square? It's just not happening. So these kids, at least they're wearing jeans and you know, you can kind of see them playing. Anyway, the three experts in the toy field are gone. It's them. The kids make all of the decisions, and Toys R Us is still a partner, and I believe that the only reason it's still on there is because Toys R Us is a major sponsor, and they're still going to manufacture the toy. So, you know, I'm sure they're the ones that are, you know, they're paying for the show. And so it's pretty easy to kind of put on there, especially when it's not on prime time. So there you go, if you're interested in that. It's out there. Also, just to kind of put it out there as well, Real Housewives of New Jersey are back. And I feel like it's been a really long time since they had their last season. And they started last week as well. I watched the first episode, Priscilla. I don't know if you did.
I did.
You know, Danielle Staub is back. And for those of you who are Housewife fans, she was season one. Her and Teresa, the table flipping incident occurred around her. Lots of things went on. She was in a book. I mean, she was I think the first housewife to ever be like kicked off of a show. Well, she's back, taking Jacqueline's spot. Jacqueline's not back. And, I watched the first episode. I was kind of like, okay, this is a good setup. Like, Danielle's coming back. It all seems a little bit forced. There's this, and you have to remember too. And Priscilla, you can tell me if you agree with me or not. I loved New Jersey for a really long time. It was my favorite just because of the family element. So you had Caroline, you had Dina, Jackie, they were all related. They had Teresa, who they had known for 20 plus years. Danielle, Dina was close to for like 15 or 20 years. All of them, you could tell that they knew each other extremely well. And now it's kind of devolved to this, kind of like what the other Housewives show franchises are, that, you know, people are kind of casted. And, you know, they might cast their friends and they might kind of know each other or see each other around in circles, but they're not close enough where they hang out on a regular basis. And so we have this introduction to this woman, Margaret, who is it was hard for me to kind of figure out what her business was, but she makes shoes and she's like clothing, accessories, design, something to that effect. And she's completely different than the typical person they've cast. We'll see how it goes with her. But I saw the previews, Priscilla, and the previews turned me off completely. It just seems so crazy. There seems like there's so much fighting. I think Teresa at some point turns on Melissa again, which the one thing I liked is the fact that Teresa and Melissa, who are sister-in-laws, have kind of mended fences and, you know, they've been very supportive of Teresa with Joe being in prison. Yeah. The previews completely freaked me out. And I'm like, I might be out on this. So, Priscilla.
Well, I'm halfway through the second episode. And I kind of got the impression that Teresa could be ready to end her marriage. I mean, I don't know, that might be making it a little extreme, but definitely that she's not happy with him. And she's finally, I think with her mom's passing or whatever, has a little bit of resentment, which I always knew would come. I think we've talked about that before. I guess I'm tired of the show revolving around Teresa. There are people that always have drama in their life. And no, and when you have to tell people that you've changed so much because of your, you know, little vacation, to me, when you protest too much, it's really not the case. So I don't think she's changed, and I didn't see those previews, but I could see that happening, and I could see all that. I'm a place in my life where these housewife shows, they used to be a guilty pleasure, but at a certain point, it's like, grow the fuck up, you know?
Well, and I don't think, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit, you know, when we think about what's happening nationally and what's happening culturally and what, you know, what's happening with America right now, essentially, that, you know, a lot of these fights and a lot of these feuds and a lot of, like, backstabbing and stuff we've talked about in regards to, like, Big Brother and other shows like that, you know, people are less likely to want to watch that. And, you know, it's especially in the Housewives series where it becomes super formulaic. So I wonder overall if how the ratings are with the show, with those type of shows, because
Because remember, we actually also like the business element in a lot of it. I mean, the family element for Jersey, New York, the reason we first fell in love with it and liked it was because of the business aspect of it, you know. Bethany was building her business at the time, you know, Jill had her business, and just the women were business savvy, and they weren't, but at some time, just like with Bachelor and Bachelorette, I don't know if it's because we're growing up, the cases, maybe it's us, maybe it's not them, maybe it's always been that way, we just didn't see it that way, but it's like, they went from a little bit of class to trashy, and I don't like trashy. I mean, I'm okay with watching, you know, a bad boat ride, you know, and it slipping through the cracks and people drowning. But when you're just mean-hearted, I don't like that. I guess I'm getting older. Whatever the case is, I don't know your perspective is. But I remember we used to have arguments about this, but you've even grown up, and now some things, you know, that didn't annoy you that annoyed me, because we are a little bit of an age gap. A little bit of an age gap, not a lot of bit of an age gap. But you are now starting to sound like me a few years ago.
Well, I think it's not I don't think it's necessarily growing up per se. I think it's the idea that, you know, shows like this become more socially aware. So they understand, and the housewives understand, that in order to stay relevant and in order to stay on the show, they have to have a storyline. Something has to be going on in their lives. So I think, you know, I think the drama becomes much more manufactured because they need to constantly find feuds. They need to constantly fight with somebody. They need to constantly make up with somebody. They need to constantly be in the spotlight in order to make their money. I mean, so many of the housewives have said, you know, that this is a job for them. And it very much is. They get paid to do this. They get paid to go out to lunches and to hang out and be on camera and stuff like that. But I think, you know, the more they want to be on, the more manufactured it becomes. And I think it's you feel it. You feel it forced when there were certain elements to it that weren't forced in the beginning, you know, because the housewives are more self-aware. Like, you know, if you go on Instagram, you see that the housewives, I mean, all they do is sell things with their catchphrases on it. Like, they're definitely making side businesses out of their main business. And hey, they're entrepreneurs, go for it. You know, if somebody wants to buy, I mean, the other day I saw that Dorinda, who I love, has plates, like paper plates that have her catchphrases on them. And if you want to go and buy Dorinda's catchphrase paper plates, go for it. You know, and good for her for selling it and making some money off of it. But, you know, when you know that you are going to make a lot of money if you say the next great catchphrase, you're going to be out there yelling and just saying random things. And you're going to workshop what those phrases are so you can get it out there into the world so that you can make money from it. And it's this whole cycle of being manufactured. And I think we miss the part of the reality TV genre that we miss, and that is the reality part of it, which is, you know, a bunch of people, normal, average people getting together and interacting, and it's not that. And I heard, you know, kind of going with this theme, and, you know, I'm a big fan of RHEP. Rob has a podcast. I love it. I listen to it all the time. And, you know, I listened to a podcast a couple weeks ago where they brought up this amazing point about the differences between the early season casts, what they look like, what their jobs were, their age ranges, their, you know, everything compared to, you know, what they look like today and how they're much more physically fit. They're much more physically attractive in that traditional model, you know, cultural sense of what we think beauty is. You know, there that didn't happen. You know, season one, season four, season 10, and so forth, you know, you wouldn't have your Coles, you wouldn't have your Devons, you wouldn't have your JPs, you know, you wouldn't have, or maybe you would have one, and now we have five, like, you know, super good-looking buff guys, and all the women, most of the women are, you know, model gorgeous, and you know, it's doesn't necessarily reflect the reality part of it anymore. And I also think that's why people kind of gravitate towards some of the contestants that don't look like that. You know, it's when I talk about, when I am talking to people about Survivor, when I'm looking at my Twitter feed, when I'm, you know, just kind of out and about, Ryan is people's favorite player so far. He's funny. He's not, you know, and he's just, he's not that, he's a little bit more relatable. And I don't know, I might be completely off on this assessment, but I think that's kind of the housewife, like why that's kind of, I'm losing interest in that. And why, you know, in reality TV, it's kind of this change from average Joe to like perfection, like, you know, the fantasy kind of thing. And I think in that you lose kind of the reality aspects of the show. And, you know, I don't know. Those are my thoughts on that. Priscilla, anything to add?
Well, yeah, since we're kind of sort of on this topic, you know, Kardashians never really, they were kind of reality, but more docudrama is what I guess they're classified as now. But, you know, one thing about with them is they try to make a point at the end of it, and they try to keep it. I mean, they're living their everyday life, and I know that the stuff is like semi-scripted, but they try to make a point, and at the end of the day, the family sticks together. And I kind of am to a point where, you know, they got slammed for a lot of stuff, and hey, they're the ones that got all this Twitter shit and Instagram shit and all this advertising. They're the ones that they were at the top of the crew of the making money on that kind of stuff, in a not so in your face kind of way. But, and I'm not trying to give kudos to the Kardashians, but when you compare why they're still here after 10 years to the Housewife franchise, to the direction that it chose to take, at least we're getting something at the end of the show. You have I'm going to compare this to Blue Bloods. I love the show for one reason only. At the end of every show, they always have a family dinner. And to me, we have lost that backbone of America. And it's kind of, I kind of parallel that with the Kardashians. At the end, the family comes together and they try to learn something from it or teach from it. Where I like, you know, back in the day, you know, we had our VH1 shows that we loved, our Guilty Pleasures and stuff. And you had your fights with cat fights and that, but it wasn't mean in spirit. And you can't, and it wasn't, sure, you had your people that brought the drama, and that was their shtick. Like New York, that was her shtick. That's where she got, you know, why she's still relevant, because she keeps making herself relevant on other reality shows. But with the Housewives franchise, I think it has taken a different direction. You know how I used to talk about Bachelor or Bachelorette, where it used to be something that we enjoyed. It was a guilty pleasure, and we seen different insight, like with their businesses and that kind of stuff. And now they just took it to a different level. And I just, it's not that I'm stopped watching, but I'm losing interest. Let's put it that way.
Well, the Kardashians are an interesting example because I mean, they are marketing and branding geniuses. So, like, again, mad props for them because they are making
a but it's not in your face kind of.
Oh, yes, it is. It's 100% an in-your-face type of thing.
It is, but, I mean, it's not, like, shoved down your throat. I don't know how to say it.
It's 100%
like,
it's shoved down your throat.
You expect it from them, and it's, I don't know. It's just what you know from them,
right.
I guess.
You expect it from them because they've done it for years. They hustle. They hustle. You can't be mad at it. I mean, if you're making $1 billion to take selfies of yourself all the time, hell, I'd be taking selfies of myself all the time. 100%. Like, that's, they are marketing and branding geniuses. And, you know, that's, I mean, that is awesome. Now, their family is their brand. So, I mean, you say, oh, they stick together. They stick together because they have to money-wise. Now, if there was no money, would they be sticking together? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But, you know, so I can't necessarily compare it. I mean, their brand is their family. So, you know, it's hard to say what they would do. But even in, you know, the housewives have to kind of cause drama every season. Well, this season on the Kardashians, three of the sisters are pregnant at the same time. I come on, you know, of course, I mean, they have to constantly up the ante as well. And again, you know, do you, you know, kidnapped at gunpoint, you know, like whatever it is in order to, be, you know, whatever that storyline needs to be, have it, you know, but it's, you know, they have to keep pushing that ante up. Everybody does. It's just the way it works out. But, you know, I, you know, I've been watching OC, the OC version of Housewives this season, and I'm kind of, I think, I didn't watch the last episode yet, but, you know, there's only so many times that you can see Vicky and Tamra make up. There's only so many times that we can go back to, you know, Vicky is not a con woman and a liar for the cancer part, when clearly she was. I mean, you know, but she did it to be part of the show. And you know, there's only so many times that we can go through that scene and just upping the ante. And now the new housewife, there's questions about her cancer. And that seems to be that overarching theme of that franchise of the show. And, you know, it has to be more and more intense. But because it has to be more and more intense, it becomes more and more manufactured. So that was my kind of original point in that. And you know, Survivor, we're kind of in that kind of boat too. Because like I said, everybody has to be, there's less normal person-ish. Everyone, the first person out, Katrina, was an Olympic swimmer. You know, like there's nothing average about most of the people in that cast. And I think that's going to be a continuation of Survivor. And speaking of Survivor, let's talk a little bit about what happened in the last couple weeks. You know, we don't love Three Tribe seasons. You and I are both in agreement of that. You know, having three tribes with six people each, it doesn't bring a lot of drama when you get to the tribal councils because there's only so many directions that you can go. And then what typically happens is tribes start losing multiple times, and now we're three episodes in, and we have one tribe, the Hustlers tribe, who is already down to four people. So I'm sure we're going to get a tribe swap soon. Not this episode. I can't remember. Did we see previews of a tribe swap next episode?
Yeah, correct.
We did.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. I was like, I vaguely remember this. So I'm glad that we only have, you know, we only had 3 weeks of this incarnation of the
well,
group
are
things,
we
and
though?
Then we go to.
They're swapping, but are they evening out, or are they going to go to two? They didn't specify that.
They usually go to two at this point. I mean, to even out would be, I guess each tribe could go to five for an episode or two. They could have three. I guess they could. They've never, in my recollection, they've never gone from three tribes to three tribes. They usually go to three to two. Sometimes they've gone back to three, but most of the time it's been three to two. So I'm going to assume that they're going to two. And I think we've had very boring first couple week vote outs. And I think part of the problem is with that is three tribes. Three tribes is six people. You know, you're going to have a core group of four or five people, and you're going to alienate one person in order for them to be a simple vote out. And, you know, and then the second part of it is just that with three tribes, there's three different beaches. There's three different beaches and tribes to keep up with. So we know quite a bit about the Hustlers. We know a little bit about the healers, or I'm sorry, about the heroes from last week, because at least they lost last week, and we lost Simone. But we know very little about the healers. The only thing that we really know is the Jessica and Cole kind of, I don't know, relationship, alliance, showman. I don't even know what you would call it at this point. But that that's the other issue with having three tribes. So I am very happy that we're going to get a swap. But you're absolutely right. They could mix it up by going to three tribes of five. That could happen. I hope it doesn't, but it could conceivably happen, I guess. I hope not. I hope not. But at the very least, it's – if we go to a tribal council, we're most likely going to see a different – we're 100% going to see a different mix of people. But the hardest part of that is then if you have three people from the Hustlers and two people for a person from the healers and a person from the heroes, then you know who's going out. You know, it's got to be two tribes. It's uneven if it goes to two tribes, but maybe they'll have a Redemption Island or a Exile Island type twist where one person goes away and rejoins a team after a tribal council. Maybe that happens. We'll see. Now you got me all worried that it's going to be three tribes of five people. Jesus.
I was saying they always try to do something different, and that would be different.
Yeah. But
there's enough people to do it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. There is. I like the people this season. You know, I'm finding people interesting. I'm enjoying watching people. I wish that tribals were a little bit more I wish that there was some true splits in alliances or something like that where you can see some things start happening. And I don't think that will happen until we get into larger groups. So I think that we're going to see fairly straightforward eliminations until we see a part where we get to, you know, a larger group. And I hope that's not when the merge happens. We need to see a little bit of that before the merge. But I'm interested to see what happens. Now, one thing I definitely wanted to talk to you about is Joe and the Idol. Joe, Cole, and the Idol. So let's talk about this. Joe finds a clue in the idol engraved into the tree, which, by the way, I liked that. I thought that was kind of cool. Paying attention to the actual bark of the tree. I would think that people passed that tree a whole bunch and didn't see it because they were too busy looking down or looking at holes or looking at, you know what I mean? So I dug that as a clue place. I dug that.
And that's it. And that they scratched it out and tried to hide it as well.
Yeah, I thought that was a smart move by Cole as well, that he went back and did that. But Joe finds this clue completely, you know, he thinks that it's a raft. He thinks that it's the water. He thinks that all of this is kind of happening. He then immediately says, well, Cole's been fishing, so Cole must have the idol. Again, Joe is not the sharpest tool in the shed. All right. So Joe confronts Cole. And the one interesting thing about this season is, like, these confrontations that we're getting about the idol. I mean, I think it's really bad gameplay, but I think that, you know, it's you don't see a lot of confrontations on the show except for right after Tribal. You know, the immediate aftermath of Tribal. But, you know, to have a confrontation about an idol and it to be that aggressive, we haven't seen that a lot of. And we've seen that both with Joe and with Alan at this point. But Joe confronts Cole. Cole says, I don't know what you're talking about. Let me see the clue. He takes him to the clue. Cole immediately figures it out and shows Joe that he has the idol. And shows Joe exactly where the idol is. Joe takes the idol. Joe now has the idol. So let's talk about this move, Priscilla. First of all, good decision or bad decision to let Cole to tell Joe where the idol is and not, let's say, go, oh, that's interesting. Let's try to find it later. And then Cole goes to the well and starts digging.
Well, I think it happened very organically, but he didn't think about it. I would have said, well, gee, I don't know what that is. And say, yeah, we'll have to look at it until later when people aren't around or something. But then also, not only tell him where it was, we'll go over and he actually dug it up for him. It's like, hey, yeah. So why was Joe the one that got it? You know, it was a double deal there, and Cole actually found it. So I don't know. Not a very smart decision, but even less smart. Telling Jessica was one thing. I think it's Jessica, isn't it?
Yeah.
Telling Jessica about it, but then to go to tell everybody else about it before they even have the competition, stupid.
Yeah. Cole is not striking me as someone who is good at the game. He reminds me of like a Taylor from Millennials versus Gen X. Like that Taylor kind of thing. He's their fry kid. I mean, but to be fair to Malcolm was also their fry candy, and Malcolm is an extremely intelligent guy and a strong player too. You know,
strong player, but really, is he? He's hardly even made it into jury the first time.
Malcolm?
I know, I'm a Malcolm fan, but we keep saying that, but he hasn't got very far in the game.
Disagree.
I'm sorry. I think his social skills could be better.
Well, and I think if we look at different types of player, and what type of player is kind of harder to be and easier to be, I think that the most difficult types of player for Survivor are the older woman type and like the big, strong, muscular, athletic looking guy type, because, you know, one is considered to be super weak and is out first. And then you have, you know, the buff athletic guy that you take out the first, you know, they're the first boot at Merge. You know, I think those are like the hardest kind of archetypes to be. But, you know, Cole definitely, you know, lots of mistakes here, lots of mistakes. Joe is going to be paranoid about Cole because Cole did exactly what Joe is paranoid about. So Joe knows that Cole knows that he has this idol. And it reminded me very much of, again, Jay and Will finding the idol in Millennials versus Gen X and Michaela coming up on them and saying, I see your idol, you know, essentially. And then they sent Michaela home that week because they saw that she knew that they had the idol. So it's a very similar situation with Joe and Cole. The difference is that Cole told everybody, Michaela didn't. She just kind of, you know, she said she wanted to let the game play out. That was how she kind of wanted to do it. But what Joe's biggest fear was has been realized because Cole has told everyone. So, you know, Cole might be in some danger with Joe. Now, Cole probably has some numbers on his side because he told everyone, therefore there's some amount of trust built in because they feel like maybe Cole is on their side. But it'll be interesting to see later on in the game if people take that as a, remember the time that Cole told everyone that Joe had the idol, so I can't really trust him when I get the idol. Or if they take that as, hey, Cole's really loyal to me, and he told me about Joe's idol, and now I need to tell him about my stuff. So it'll be interesting to see which way that goes. Cole's social game is his strength by far, but a lot of big mistakes in these first couple of episodes. The one thing he did do was, you said it right, they scratched off the idol clue off the tree, which was super smart. And now Cole and Joe are the only two that know right now that that's where those clues are.
When they change tribes, will Cole be smart enough to figure that out for other tribal areas?
I think Cole will be smart enough to figure that out. The question is going to be whether Cole is smart enough not to tell anyone about it or not. That's the key. If he's on a different tribe, he might say, he might tell someone, hey, the clue is on the tree. But I think he knows that. I think he knows that that's a possibility. I think he knows that it could happen again. So it's just a matter of whether or not he's going to tell someone or not. So that I didn't love. That was the only kind of real big kind of strategic will they or won't they that we've seen so far in the game. So we're only three episodes in. We'll see what happens with it. I don't know. I mean, it's so far it's straightforward. I'm hoping that the swap is two tribes. But now you have me extremely worried that it's three tribes, five people, and that will suck. So we'll go from there. I'm kind of interested, like just looking long term, I'm kind of hoping that this swap, Chrissy and Ryan end up on a tribe together, because I would love to see how Ryan is going to play him telling Chrissy, if he tells Chrissy that he was the one that gave her the idol in the first week. That's what I'm curious to see how he's going to play that. He's, you know, he has this relationship with Devin. I kind of think that he tells Chrissy in an effort to kind of bring her in as a third with him and Devin or, you know, strike up this relationship. But I also want to see, like, it would be interesting. Ryan is the only one that knows that Chrissy's idol, if she ever tries to use it as a real idol. he knows that it's a non-working idol. It was only good for one episode. So he also has that in his back pocket as well. So I want to know if his strategy is going to be tell her, you know, and then the three of them kind of use the idol in a very strategic way, or not tell her and kind of use it against her later on. So that's like the next kind of strategy point that I'm interested in seeing. We'll see what happens.
I actually kind of forgot about that, to be honest with you. But yeah, you're right. It'd be neat to see how that plays out. Or if
I also like Ryan. He has been definitely growing on me. I didn't think I was going to like him from pre-interviews. I thought that he was kind of like this nerdy, kind of wise-ass, like self-deprecating guy, and that's who he is. But I think he's kind of funny in a lot of different ways. I think he's going to be a good strategic player. And I like Chrissy too. And I would like to see them work together. Like, I think that would be an interesting alliance. So, you know, I would like to see them team up. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I would like to see that kind of happen. If they end up in the same tribe together, if, you know, there's a lot of ifs in that situation, but I'm hoping to see that. The other thing that we should probably discuss too is with Patrick going home and, you know, Patrick was definitely there for the comment. He was like Josh from Big Brother. Like, his, you know, Josh had a series of things that happened with him that he ended up winning the game. But in any other context, Josh would be one of the first people out. And that was Patrick. You know, that Patrick is like, what would happen to Josh? That's like my best comparison. So, you know, we have this kind of crazy, you know, dude. And then we find out that there is a, and we don't see this on the show, but we find this out through interviews with them after the fact and before the game, that Allie and Patrick, who ended up on the same tribe, know each other from college. In a close enough way that he helped her move into her apartment. They were neighbors in college. They were in the same friend circle, kind of indirectly, so they weren't super close, but they were, you know, they were around each other. But, you know, in
they had
survivor,
a leg up on, when it comes to relationship, they had a leg up.
Well, absolutely. In Survivor, if I saw, you know, this woman that I saw in a supermarket once buying tomatoes, and now I saw her in Survivor, you instinctively trust someone that you know over a stranger. You've seen it time and time again. And so I don't think that they knew that they were going to be together. I don't think that Survivor knew. I think it was like just this thing that it just happened. But, you know, it was such a, I think Simone was a victim of their pregame relationship. And I was going to be pretty upset if Lauren was a victim of their pregame relationship as well. So I am glad that it went down like that. And, you know, Patrick ended up going home. Because I wouldn't want the game to kind of be dictated because of a prior relationship, Paul and Raven. You know, just to throw that out there, another like weird tangential. I have a crazy thought about that, by the way, but I won't say that. I won't say it out loud. But ideas about Paul and Raven knowing each other outside of the game, which I'll share some other time. But, you know, it's just the idea of knowing someone in a very stressful situation, you're obviously going to, you know, connect with them. You know, look at Dick and Danielle season 8. They didn't speak to each other for 2 years. They paired up immediately. You know, the sisters and Alex and Morgan on OTT who claimed that they hated each other and they were never going to work together. They were working together within 5 minutes of being in the house. You know, exes season 4, exes were working together. You know, it's just part of it's just human nature. You know, so to work with someone that you know in a roundabout way is human nature. So I'm glad that that connection is broken, and that in the future, if there's any kind of weird, I might know you, for God's sakes, at least put them on a different starting tribe. You know, when there's 6 people and 2 people know each other, it's a bad spot to be in. So I'm glad that was over. Similar situation on Project Runway this season. You know, I love some Project Runway, and I talked to you guys earlier in the season about how they're adding like more model interviews, and they kind of tweak it just enough that it's kind of cool and fun but not crazy. They had twin sisters competing with each other, and you know, it was rough to watch. One sister was just better in this situation than the other, so that she helped her sister out a ton, and she was getting through week after week when other people were going home without help, and it was kind of rough to see until we got to, of course, they organized the best situation, which is the sisters were in a team challenge together. They lost, and then they had to go up against each other for one to be eliminated and one not to be, you know, which was, of course, going to happen. You know, that's how it always works out, that they pair up people to be eliminated who know each other well. And, you know, they're twins, for God's sakes. They end up we don't know which twin to eliminate, so we're going to do an extra challenge, which they do once in a while on Project Runway, where each person gets an hour to kind of revamp their outfit to make it better, to change it up. And one twin fell apart completely. The more solid twin, the stronger person in the competition, like went to work and like started working hard. And the other one very much fell apart and quit after 10 minutes. So it was very anticlimactic for what they were trying to accomplish. But, you know, we need to get away from people knowing each other. It needs to stop.
Well, I know this is kind of off topic a little bit, but like knowing people, from what I understand, from what I've read, like they're going to have BB players from the same season on the challenge, which leads me to believe that is an leak that is kind of an introduction as to us having the crossover onto Celebrity Big Brother, maybe from the challenge people, you think?
That's what I'm kind of thinking. I mean, it was, so it's not a done deal yet.
Right.
It's still rumor mill. Nothing has been officially announced, but you know, just to kind of talk about what the rumors are. The rumors were that on the next season of the challenge, 4 people from Big Brother 18 were going to be on the show: Corey, Big Meech, Natalie, and Victor. I heard additional rumors that Corey was just an alternate, so he's not actually on the show, and that Big Meech was never on the show. So
they
now it's just.
They have to have Corey and Victor on, only because of the Nicole aspect. They have to have that on there.
Well, no one cares. That's the hard thing about that. No one cares. No one in the challenge world is going to care.
But that's why they don't have to.
They absolutely don't have to have that relationship.
They want that drama. but they're not going to get it.
Not gonna be, they won't even show it. They won't even show it because it's not. Here's the thing. I'm so glad you're bringing this up with only 10 minutes left, but I'm sure we'll talk about it again. I'm sure we'll talk about it again. But here's the thing. You know, those relationships that happen behind the scenes, on the challenge, there's a million of them. Most of them are not brought up. You know, most of them are not brought up because you don't have any footage of it and there's nothing to talk about, so they never bring it up. Corey and Nicole were together on 18. They broke up after the show. Victor and Nicole got together after the show. I mean, there's no footage of any of that. And they're people on another show that most people, most challenge watchers, have never watched. No one cares. You know, it's like the Are You the One? They have so much drama and behind the scenes, and you see very little of it. Hell, at this point, they barely talk about when there's two Are You the One people on that they know each other from the same season of Are You the One. You know, the last episode, I think, where Brittany was so like, I am a Hunter all the way. I'm completely with Hunter. And I thought to myself, when did Brittany become so pro-Hunter? And then I was like, wait a minute. They were on Are You the One together. That's why she's so pro-Hunter. But it took me a second for me to kind of put that all together. So they're not acknowledging a lot of that stuff. I think it's going to be an interesting experiment. If it, in fact, this is true, and again, nothing has been confirmed. But, you know, Viacom owns both CBS and MTV, so it makes sense for there to be a crossover. I know that they're trying to find people to kind of populate the shows. I know that they're doing more shows. They have the spinoff of Champs versus Stars, which they did announce that casting. And by the way, Emily is back, which is awesome. I'm so excited to see someone. At this point, I'm very happy when we see someone that we haven't seen in a few years. I'm always like, yes. You know, when Veronica came back, I was like, yes. Oh my God, if like a Katie came back or an Evelyn. Oh my God, if an Evelyn came back, I would be so excited. Coral, oh God, if Coral came back, I would lose my mind. Ruthie, holy God, I would die. You know, like I would love it. I would love it. So we haven't seen Emily in a while, and I was very excited to see that she's officially on the cast. But the stars are, I mean, I only recognized Sean, the gymnast, and that was it. That was it. And I know T.O. is on there. So, you know, they're athletes, so I don't know why they don't call them champs versus athletes. I don't know why it would be stars. But anyway, I digress. But to have Natalie and Victor on, you know, I think is an interesting experiment to see how they integrate on a show like this. You know, Big Brother is a very different show. You know, you're doing everything you can to stay out of drama. You know, and
alive. Her narcissistic view, her bananas will chew her up and spit her out.
Sure. But I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how that kind of works out because they're not used to that. I mean, Big Brother, you get alcohol maybe 4 or 5 times in a summer. And when you do, it might be one drink. They have alcohol as much as you want all of the time. You know, just that change is going to make a huge difference. Just that hookups are encouraged. Just that, you know, all of that stuff. I think it's going to be an interesting game for them to play. But Victor is he's an athletic person, and so is Natalie. So they might be able to hold their own in challenges, so that will be kind of cool to see. So we'll see what happens to that. But I do think you're absolutely right. I think it's a gateway to people, specifically Bananas, to be a part of Celebrity Big Brother, which I think might happen when it goes down. I would love to see Bananas on Celebrity Big Brother simply because he'll play the game hard, and there won't be, you know, yes. sometimes on these celebrity shows, you know, they don't play as hard. They want to be known. They have a public image to protect. They have, you know, they have all these things that they're trying to
and
kind of do, promote themselves.
That is his
well,
image.
Exactly. his celebrity is that he's a professional reality contestant on competition reality shows. And I think that's going to go a long way. So, you know, I would love to see him in that world and see how he strategizes, especially since, you know, we've seen him for years with a group of the same, you know, he's always with Camilla, he's always with Cara Maria, he's always with CT, he's always with, you know, the same groups of people. I would love to see him by himself and see him play against, you know, different types of people, especially since we're going to get, I am sure, Celebrity Big Brother, I'm sure we're getting a lot of retired athletes. I'm sure we're getting, you know,
Lance Bass.
Disney Channel stars. I don't even know if we get Lance Bass. I don't know if we get Lance Bass.
We do.
He might be too big for this. He's the host of 90s House, for God's sakes.
Oh,
he's
my
the host
God,
of 90s
that
House
sucks. I didn't even watch the second episode.
No, I'm all in on 90s House. I'm not going to lie. I'm all in. It is the most ridiculous thing. I missed the first episode, but I watched the second in which, the teams got so angry at each other that they started throwing each other's shoes out in the backyard and getting all angry and just throwing more shoes. And I just thought, this is the best. This is the best show ever. And the second challenge was that they had to recreate a 90s music video. So the girls had Spice Girls and the guys had NSYNC, obviously. And the guest judge was one Joey Fatone of NSYNC fandom, of NSYNC, you know, fame. And, you know, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And it's like this crazy cross between Surreal Life and Big Brother. And I'm in. I am in. It is ridiculous. And you shouldn't be in, but I'm in. I don't even recommend that other people watch it. I don't encourage people to watch it, but I'm watching it. There's one on my DVR right now that I'm looking forward to watching.
When their music video was going on, were you singing to the music video with them?
Well, it wasn't really a music video. It was more like they had to do their dance moves, and it was bad. I mean, it was a bunch of people that don't know how to dance, learn how to dance. Well, I mean, which was, you know, fine. What's, you know, the expectation? They're not professional dancers, but it was just they got so angry at each other that they just started throwing each other's shoes in the backyard, and I just thought, my God, this is one fantastic show. And it was great. And I'm in.
You're probably
two
people watching it. You and the producer.
No, I had somebody else text me about it the other day, or not text me, tweet me about it the other day. So I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one. I'm in. But again, I don't encourage you. I don't recommend it. But I'm in. I'm 100% sold on this show. I will watch every season, every episode. From like, that's how it is. It's done. It's already decided. So anyway, that's it for tonight. I want to thank everybody listening live, everybody listening in the archives. Next week, more reality shows. We got to talk some Dancing with the Stars. We got to talk some Voice. I want to talk a little bit about Hell's Kitchen All-Stars, too. So we'll do that next week. All right, have a good weekend, everyone. Bye.
All right, night, everyone. Here's closing one more time.